couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. Well, I hope you all had a happy Labor Day and a Labor Week, because we still got some pretty slim pickings on movies this week. Early September, like I said, it's a terrible time for movies. It is after the summer season, it's before award season, so while there's still some gems floating around out there, especially in smaller releases, the big stuff is pretty forgettable. But still, we're going to try and hit on it. We're going to be talking about The Identical. We're going to be talking about Innocence. We're going to be talking about Thunder in the House of Magic. But we're also going to be talking about cooler stuff outside of the actual movie reviews. We're going to be talking about box office and news and the trailer park and listener feedback, the DVD roundup. And especially in the news, we're going to be taking a long chunk of time to look at the piece of news that has been dominating entertainment news for the last week, which is, of course, the nude picture leak and really what the larger implications are of that. But we'll get into that later. If you want to get a hold of me, and this is, of course, where you can get a hold of me and complain about what I am eventually going to be saying about the nude photo leaks, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. You can find me on the interwebs at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. You can find me on Twitter at twitter.com/KevinCarr. Again, the voicemail is 740-205-6456, and I think I hear Ron Burgundy coming.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
That's right. We're going to actually do a lot of news in this segment. Not that there's a lot of things happening. It's just that there's a lot of things to talk about with this nude photo leak. Not just because I like breasts and I like talking about breasts, but I think there's some greater implication that a lot of people are missing in this race to have knee-jerk feminist reactions and the spin that all of these celebrities are trying to put on it. I think there's greater implications here that we're going to talk about. But first, let's hit a couple points. Rest in peace to Richard Attenborough. I missed mentioning him last week. And it's sad to see him go. He's done a lot of things. He did, like, directed Gandhi and stuff like that. But he also played John Hammond. Most people recognize him as John Hammond from the Jurassic Park movies. He played Santa Claus in the not very good remake of Miracle on 34th Street. But also Joan Rivers just died. She was in the hospital and she was put in intensive care and she passed away, which is, of course, a shame. And it's really interesting with Joan Rivers because she had come out and said some insensitive, very typical Joan Rivers insensitive type humor about, I think it was about Robin Williams, and she like dies like 2 weeks later. And it's a shame because she's had a kind of a tragic life in the sense that she was a really smart as a whip comedian and had some tough turns when she got her own talk show outside of The Tonight Show and she got kicked off of that gig. And then all the plastic surgery thing. If you watch Joan Rivers, A Real Piece of Work, which is on Netflix right now, you get a really keen insight into her life. So it's worth checking it out if you haven't seen that yet. A couple real quick news stories before we get into the breast reduction, we'll say. Dwayne The Rock Johnson has finally confirmed what he's been teasing for probably 8 years, and that he is going to be playing the role of Black Adam in the Shazam movie, which is not Captain Marvel. And also, here's the other thing. Shazam is not the name of the character. Shazam is the old wizard who gives Captain Marvel his powers. The reason they call it Shazam is because it was originally published by Fawcett Comics as Captain Marvel, and then it was sued by DC. And before DC ended up picking up the rights to Captain Marvel, Marvel Comics created a character called Captain Marvel, and they had to rename the title Shazam. Shazam should be played by Christopher Lee, because pretty much his Saruman image is perfect for Shazam. And Black Adam is the Rock. That's great. I just hope to God that they get somebody decent to play Captain Marvel and Billy Batson, and that they cast that as two separate people and not like Taylor Lautner or some awful nonsense like that. The other thing that's an interesting piece of news is there was a 4DX movie theater opening in LA, and there's an article in Variety talking about how this might end up becoming the future of movies. It's a 104 seat theater that basically moves the seats around, and you get like jolts and sensory things, like you get smells and they'll spray water on you. The thing is, it's a 104 seat theater in Los Angeles. And yeah, I played at 63% capacity during the week and sold out shows on the weekend when it's normally like 15% capacity during the week. The problem is, this isn't a representative sample. And I think it's a gimmick. It's a novelty. It's more gimmicky than 3D was when that came in. And especially if they're hoping to find a way to do it with a upcharge, like a surcharge, it's not going to stick. No one, I mean, yeah, maybe one 100 seat theater in any big city might work, but I don't think this is the future of movies. I think this is Hollywood grasping at straws, trying to offer something more than the home cinema experience, which is incredibly hard to beat nowadays. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Okay, let's get into the breasts. Let's talk about boobs. There was a huge nude photo leak that included images of Jennifer Lawrence, Victoria Justice, Mary Elizabeth Winstead, Teresa Palmer, Kirsten Dunst. All these celebrities, these female celebrities, had nude pictures that were suddenly leaked on the internet. And it's maddening watching people react to this, because here's the reality. There is this rush to feminism, this overreaching rush of feminism. And you see this with people posting going, it's not their fault, and don't blame the victims. And I actually saw somebody actually say that this should be prosecuted as a sex crime, as sexual assault. Like, no, it's not. It's different if somebody were to take pictures of them and have it unbeknownst to them, because that is a huge invasion of privacy, and there's a lot of problems with that. These are pictures that they took of themselves, had on their accounts, and it was hacked. And I actually looked up, I was reading an article on Yahoo Finance about the guy who did this. It wasn't that he hacked these servers. He basically collected all these from this ongoing, consistent little cottage gray industry of people who find nude celebrity photos and they share them. And he amassed this massive collection over months, and he let it all go at one point, which ticked off a lot of the people involved in this cottage industry, because it kind of drew a lot of attention to them. But here's the thing. Ricky Gervais has come out and made some comment about saying, if you don't want to have your nude photos from your computer or phone get leaked on the internet, don't put nude photos of yourself on the computer and phone. And people are like, oh, you're blaming the victims. How dare you? You're such a misogynist, sexist jerk. Here's the thing. These people put that on there. This is not something that somebody created outside of it. These were just stolen. This is not a sex crime. This is a simple case of stealing photographs. And then just watching the spin come out of it. Because, like, I think it was Victoria Justice was coming out and saying hers were fake. And I don't necessarily believe that's true. But a lot of them deny, because they don't want to admit that they've done it. But when we learned something, I think it was Ashley Green. It was either Ashley Green or Scarlett Johansson. When she had a photo leak, she said, yes, those are mine. And then what she could do is she can go off to any site that had it and said, you got a copyright violation because it's my photo. I never give you rights to put it up there. But if you say it's not yours or it's fake, then you didn't create it, so you don't have a copyright claim to it. Then you have Mary Elizabeth Winstead saying, well, but it was a long time ago, which then brings up bigger issues with the cloud storage, because apparently this was hacked out of their cloud accounts. The bottom line is, there is a group of people out there who feverishly are trying to get their hands on photos of young, attractive female celebrities. And nude photos. And you can take them. No one's saying you can't take them. But the thing is, if you take them and you store them on your phone and then you get them uploaded to a cloud storage service, these are not secure locations. And if you think that they're secure and you think that people aren't going to find them, you're really kidding yourself. So look, if you're young, attractive, female, and a celebrity, either don't take pictures of yourself like this or have them secured somehow. Get a Polaroid or put them on a camera that's not on the network drive or something. But the insanity of telling somebody, well, if you tell somebody don't do that, that you're blaming the victim, that's no more blaming the victim than telling somebody don't leave your car unlocked with the keys in the ignition. Or if I used to belong to a gym. Yes, I know. I was in a gym once. And there was a rash of people breaking windows and taking stuff off of people's seats. And so they told people, they said, look, if you've got a purse or a briefcase or a wallet or a phone or whatever, don't leave it on your front seat, because people have been known to break the windows and take it and run. Does that say that it's your fault? Does that say that you're responsible for it? No, it's just saying this is a way you can protect yourself. I've never heard anyone say, oh, you're blaming the victim. You're not blaming the victim. And here's the problem with, there's actually more I got to say on this, so I'm going to talk about it more on the break, but I'm out of time. But there's a lot more to say about this case, because it has greater implication than just Jennifer Lawrence's boobs. So I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking more about the breast issue, and we're going to talk about the trailer park and Thunder in the House of Magic. Carr with Fat Guys at the Movies. Let's continue talking about this nude photo leak real quick. The problem with the overreach of sudden feminism in this case is it undoes what feminism is supposed to do. Feminism is all about equality and access and opportunity. And by treating female celebrities different than everybody else, you're treating them with kid gloves. You should say, well, you know, this has happened. And yes, you can prosecute based on stealing things. You can prosecute based on copyright claims. But to suddenly say that it's sexual assault because you took my nude pictures that I put on an unsecure storage drive, you're treating them with kid's gloves. I mean, look, if you're not a young, attractive female celebrity, you're fine. I probably have terabytes of nude photos of myself on various cloud services. You haven't seen those emerge because nobody wants to see those. You know who's probably safe? Sandra Bernhardt. And I'm sure there's some freaky stuff that Sandra Bernhardt has taken of herself with her and Jay Leno. I'm sure you can find tons of sex pictures probably in her records. But nobody wants to see those. Nobody's digging those up. Nobody's hacking those. And the other thing that I find completely disingenuous is all the feminists and the faux feminists and the rah-rah armchair feminists who are going after him, and like the entire Jezebel website. These are the same people who laugh and point and sneer at Anthony Weiner for taking pictures of himself and sending them to his girlfriend. Well, this is the same thing. Nobody had rights to those. That was his in a personal correspondence. Why is he not given the same consideration that Jennifer Lawrence is? See, that's the problem. You can't be a hypocrite about these things. Ultimately, the big problem, the real issue is cloud security. Bigger implications, because there's bigger things at stake. What this shows is that cloud security is not very good. Why? Because most people don't give a crap about your photos. Nobody cares about the photos of your dog and your cat or your kids or of your food. I have so many pictures on my phone, none of them are going to be worth anything to anybody outside of my own body odor. But if you have something valuable, it's accessible. All cloud storage, it's just a new term for remote access. That's all it is. It's an offsite server. And the thing is that the cloud storage, you don't have any access. You don't have control over that. And it's designed to be accessed by multiple devices so people can hack into it. This is why, and even the most secure things in the world that hold financial data. They just had a big thing where Home Depot had their finances and their credit card information stolen, and so all these names showed up there. Remember, Target had a big release that people hacked into that stuff. If they're going to hack into Target and Home Depot for the credit card information to share that, yeah, they're going to find a way into your iPhone library. But the bigger implication, there's another little hitch to this whole thing. Michaela Maroney apparently had images that were taken of her when she was underage, probably by her. But the thing is, if you're underage and you still take pictures of yourself, you still are facing child pornography issues. So it's not just whoever's hacked this and who posted these, but it's Michaela Maroney who might be implicated for child porn of herself. Or, greater issue, what if the feds decide to go after Apple? Because there are 15-year-olds who have photos who are obviously, there's probably tons of underage nudes and sex images that kids are taking of themselves. And they're storing them. They're probably getting put on the cloud drives. This is sort of like the whole Mega Upload case where the feds went after Mega Upload for piracy because other people are using Mega Upload as a storage place for piracy. What if they start going after having some sort of oversight on kids that have iPhones, or, you know, maybe they'll start scanning those drives. This opens it up because suddenly you're transmitting it and you're not just putting it on a phone. It's going through the internet and it's going through broadcast. There's huge implications here, and especially also with Mary Elizabeth Winston's claim that they're old pictures. Maybe they were just on this collection and they got them a while back, or maybe these things are not deleted when they're deleted. Who knows? This is why it's a bigger deal. All right, we need to stop talking about this. Here we come into the trailer park. All right, the first one I want to talk about is ABCs of Death 2, which is an anthology horror movie where each installment features a letter of the alphabet, 26 installments, each about death.
Please do not kill me! Father, please come!
The love of God, finish this!
Are you this is for real?
Of course it's real, because someone's going to get punched in a minute.
This comes out on October 2nd. It's probably going to be limited releases by Magnet Releasing. It's going to be limited, and you can probably get it on demand. So the first one was fun. It was a novelty. It was interesting. So I'm kind of looking forward to this one as well. The next one I really want to hit is Foxcatcher, which opens on November 14th.
I want more than anything to win a gold medal. And we have someone who could do that. But there are some psychological issues that we need to take care of.
I am leading men. I am training them. I am teaching them. I am giving them a dream. And I am giving America hope.
This is Steve Carell's Oscar bid. This is where he plays a wrestling coach who has some serious problems, who is a really good wrestling coach, but again, like I said, has some serious problems. Channing Tatum plays one of his wrestlers. And the biggest boon for this is that it's Steve Carell playing a dark and twisted character, which I've been wanting him to see, and it takes it even further than the kind of just the a-hole he played in the way, way back last year. And so that opens November 14th. I'm looking forward to this. You're listening to Fat Guys in the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's really just blast through this first review because we ran out of time talking about Jennifer Lawrence's breasts. Let's talk about Thunder in the House of Magic, a kids movie, to get us out of the whole breast discussion. An abandoned cat finds a reluctant family of misfits living with an aging magician and have to save his home from his greedy nephew.
Thunder, no! Help!
Uncle Lawrence.
Where am I?
In the hospital.
Oh. Can you feed the animals?
I'll take care of everything.
Let me show you the living room, Mrs. Eames.
He wants to sell the house, and we'll all get kicked out.
Time to get rid of all this junk.
What are we gonna do now?
Come on, guys. I've got a new strategy.
This is a CGI movie, and it's independent. I believe it's Belgian. It comes from Belgium. And it's an animated film. It's very sweet and charming. I mean, it's not like any of these animated films. It's not at the level of Pixar. People in the States and probably worldwide get very spoiled with the amazing animation we see from Pixar and DreamWorks and, you know, even stuff like Universal with their Minions and the huge budgets where they have these $150 million budgets for animated films. This is a much more restrained budget. It's probably 30 some million dollars. And it reminds me animation style of stuff like The Nut Job, if you remember that movie earlier this year about the squirrel, which was a cute enough film for what it was. But this one, it's cute. It's very much a kid show kind of thing. It has a large group of characters. It sort of thinks out of the box. It feels a little bit more like a TV movie. It doesn't quite feel like a theatrical release. And it is getting a very limited release, but that's okay. I mean, these kind of things is fun to see. Not everything needs to be Pixar. Not everything needs to be DreamWorks. This isn't going to win an Oscar or anything, but it's an alternative and it's something different out there. While you're watching the other terrible movies this week, you could be watching a cute little kids movie. And that's really what this is. Thunder in the House of Magic. So I'm going to say ultimately Thunder in the House of Magic kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
All right, I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about the two I releases, The Identical and Innocence.
Oh, despicable me.
Welcome back to Fat Guys in the Movies with Kevin Carr. We're finally getting into the movie reviews. We took a lot of time talking about the nude photo leak, which I think which is such a huge issue because it just goes beyond pervy guys wanting to look at Jennifer Lawrence's nipples. Like I said, the entire cloud storage mentality and the race to connect everything and upload everything has now been questioned. And I think we're going to see implications of that. But let's not talk about that anymore. Let's talk about the movies that are new this week. And like I said, it's the beginning of September still. And the pickings are real slim. I'm not really burying the lead in terms of what I thought of these movies. The first one is The Identical. A twin separated from his brother at birth struggles against his religious family to strike out into a career in pop music like his brother did.
A honky tonk, you're going into the ministry.
Your father tells me you got a mind to follow in his footsteps.
Mama, I don't hear this call Daddy wants me to hear.
It's a man's job learning to stand in his truth. Anybody ever tell you you look just like Drexel Hemsley?
Are you guys related or something?
No, not related. You're the girl for me,
yeah. This is ultimately a faith-based movie. When you really watch it, it doesn't come across necessarily on the poster. It sort of reminds me a little bit of Mom's Night Out, where Mom's Night Out was very much a faith-based film. But you wouldn't know from the title or the movie poster. You would have to either watch the trailer or see the movie. And I think that that did a disservice to Mom's Night Out, which was actually kind of a cute little movie. Comes out on DVD this week. We'll talk about that in a little bit later. But it did a disservice to it because so many people are seeing the faith-based movies that have very aggressive titles like God's Not Dead, Heaven Is For Real, Son of God, those kind of movies that are very obviously religious agenda films. And this one, I wouldn't say it has a religious agenda, but it's definitely, it feels like a Hallmark movie. It reminds me a little bit of The Christmas Candle that I talked about last year around Christmas time, or The Ultimate Gift or The Ultimate Life, which definitely have maybe not overt Christian overtones on the poster, but it definitely is dealing with a lot of those issues. But what it does is it's a musician biopic without being a musician biopic. And it actually has a creative way to get around all the sex, drugs, and rock and roll that is involved in rock and roll. I mean, it's essentially, in this universe, Elvis exists, but it's basically a version of Elvis, even though the time doesn't quite work out exactly right for him. And the guy is basically an Elvis impersonator. I mean, the guy who plays him really looks like Elvis. The problem is it's just so schmaltzy and cheesy, and it just uses certain techniques that are just awful, like narration. I mean, it's like a Twilight movie at times. It's just constant narration. There's narration to stuff that doesn't need to be narrated. It's like, I traveled back to my childhood home, and you see him going to a childhood home. So you don't need the voiceover to say something like that. It starts off just boring in a lot of ways because it's trying to present this squeaky clean version of the music industry and this guy wanting to be a part of the music industry. And the real oomph of the movie, I think, would be if there was a meeting of the two of them. And there's a point where they sort of cross paths, but you kind of want them to see each other and reveal it to each other. And you don't really get that. You never get that payoff in this movie. And then at a certain point, the movie just gets laughable. The movie just goes off the rails. It has some of the worst dialogue I've heard in a long time. I knew this was not going to be a good movie for a couple reasons. First of all, when I went to go see it, I had to go see it on Thursday night and pay to go see it. I couldn't even sneak in because nobody else was in the theater. And I didn't want to be sitting in the theater when somebody comes in and say, we didn't have anyone on the show. So I paid to go see the movie, sat in an empty theater. And it's pretty rare for me, even on like a Thursday night, to go see a movie in an empty theater. That's pretty rare. And that happened twice on the same night with this and the next film, Innocence. Even movies that you'd think no one would be seeing, there's usually one person else in there. No, nobody else here. Maybe it was because football started this week and there was football games on Thursday night. I don't know. I just think nobody really knew about this movie. And on top of it, I remember I emailed the publicist who handled that studio, Freestyle Releasing, who was releasing the movie. Not only did they not screen it for me, not only did they not provide any sort of screening link or disc, they never got back to me. So they were not interested in promoting this film whatsoever. So this movie's not good. It's laughable. By the time you get to the middle, it's laughable. And it gets just painful because it just goes on forever. And the acting and the dialogue is pretty awful. I mean, they say honky tonk, I don't know how many times in this movie. And I'm like, I felt like Jules from, with Jerry Curl from Pulp Fiction saying, say it one more time, say honky tonk one more time. I dare you. So yeah, the identical sucks.
It sucks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next movie I want to talk about is Innocence. Smaller release based on a best-selling worldwide bestseller, which is, of course, since it's not Hunger Games or Harry Potter or Twilight, it's probably going to be terrible. A girl in a New York boarding school suspects the teachers and administration are preparing her for a virgin sacrifice.
Welcome to Hamilton, Rebecca. I am Miss Neal, your principal.
Beckett, would you like to come through? I remember my first day here as a student.
It was a very long time ago. My family have been looking after this school for generations, Beckett. You really remind me of myself when I was your age. They all went to Hamilton and they all killed themselves.
So what is it about Hamilton that makes students want to kill themselves?
This movie is yet another movie for teenage girls who've read this book. And I'm sure the book's big and it's a big deal and a lot of people have read it, but I don't think it translates very well. This movie is such a neutered film. The movie itself is only scary to teenage girls whose the most extremely horrific horror books that they've ever, movies they've ever seen is the Twilight movies. If Twilight, if you consider Twilight to be a horror story, then this movie might work for you. But otherwise, it's just plain boring. And all the dialogue is given by everybody. Everyone sounds like they're doped up on Thorazine. Just like all the lines are delivered like this. And that's how everyone speaks. I mean, it just, you feel like the room has been filled with ether. And you're going into a daze, like the end of that Bugs Bunny short where the mad scientist is trying to put his brain in a robot. And he's like, come back, you rabbit. That is what this movie was like. And it really doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And to get to the stuff where they're thinking that she might be, they're going after her virgin blood. That's the only interesting part of it. The rest of it is just this girl kind of flopping around this boarding school, and there's a couple dead students that she sees as ghosts, but there's not a whole lot of anything to it. But all the stuff with the virgin sacrifices and the blood, you take forever to get there. It's like an hour and a half long, but it felt like it was 3 hours. And once again, nobody was in this movie. Now, I'm not talking about in the film. I'm talking about in the screening. I went to go see it, and it was like, this wasn't even like a midnight show. I saw it was an 8 o'clock show at a pretty big theater in town. And again, like I said, football was going on, but this target market doesn't, the people this should be appealing to, I really don't see as giant football fans. It was aimed at teenage girls. And 8 o'clock on a Thursday night, you'd think that teenage girls would, at least a couple of them would come out and see the movie. I mean, apparently this is opening in 500 theaters. I've never heard of the company that's done it. It really is a nothing movie that's flying completely under the radar. We've had some famous films not do well, and I've actually gone and seen them. I remember I saw Delgo once, which is an animated film. And actually broke the record at the time. I don't know if it keeps this record for the lowest performance per screen average of a certain wide level of release. This one's going to have similar. It's only like in 500 theaters, but this movie's not even going to make the top 10. And it's a new movie, and it's in during school year. This would be perfect. This would be something that should reach its audience, but it's not. I don't think anyone's going to see it. It's boring. And like I said, it's got a soundtrack that's like, the Twilight soundtrack took too much cough syrup. Anyways, Innocence sucks.
It sucks.
I need to go to a break. When I come back, we're going to be talking about some listener feedback, the box office, and the world famous DVD roundup. Kevin Carr with Fat Guys of the Movies, painfully protecting my terabytes of nude photos of myself. I've got them on secure servers all over the world. Do not go searching for them, because nobody wants to see these things. I'm literally hiding my financial data within these files because no one wants to access them. We don't have any more movies to talk about. So let's talk about some listener feedback. We haven't heard from our good friend Thomas from Seattle in a while, and it's not a voicemail. It's an email. But he actually brings up an interesting point. This is very off topic of what I say, but I think it's an interesting thing to talk about because it dovetails into the greater implication of why directors get chosen and what happens and how they can come off of flops. And here's his email. He says, I know Sky Captain and the World of Tomorrow was considered a box office disappointment, but I think there's little doubt that director Kerry Conran brought a different approach to making movies. Why has he not been given another chance? Christopher Nolan's first big screen movie, Insomnia, was only mildly successful, yet he was handed Batman. Well, there's a couple things. All due respect, Thomas. Sky Captain, the World of Tomorrows was not a box office disappointment. It was a bomb. It had a budget of $70 million, which is huge, but not insurmountable. I mean, it wasn't $200 million. This was 10 years ago. It didn't even make that back with all the monies. Worldwide grosses, it was $58 million. So it didn't even make its budget back. Whereas if you look at Insomnia more than doubled its budget. And before he did Insomnia, he had Memento, which was a huge money success because it was only like a $9 million budget and it made like $40 million worldwide. So he had proved himself twice already with smaller films. And these were also very respected films. While Sky Captain, the World of Tomorrow was given a lot of good reviews, it did not do well. It did not connect with an audience. And yes, it did kind of pioneer the virtual studio. You know, later you had Sin City and 300 shooting against a green screen. But the look just didn't look right to me. It looked, it was too blurry. And he had this massive cast that should have done well. I mean, Gwyneth Paltrow, Angelina Jolie, Jude Law, this was a cast that should have done extremely well. Everything else was aligned. It's just the movie wasn't very good and it didn't connect. And then there's also the fact that what was he going to follow it up with? I mean, Christopher Nolan had stuff in the works and he had a lot of control and he worked on stuff. The Kenny Conran, he didn't have a whole lot going on. He was supposedly going to be directing John Carter of Mars until Andrew Stanton did it. But he has to yet come up with another idea. He played all his cards with Sky Captain, the World of Tomorrow. Just as Zack Snyder, he had done Dawn of the Dead, but then he played his cards for 300, and 300 paid off in spades. So that's why Kenny Conran hasn't had a second chance. I mean, they'll probably give him one eventually, but that's why he didn't get one immediately. He had nothing to follow it up with, and he had no success before that, whereas Christopher Nolan did. And I know you don't like Christopher Nolan, or you take whatever jabs you can at Christopher Nolan, Thomas. But yeah, I mean, Nolan earned it going into this, you know. It's sort of like a Jon Favreau. You know, he got handed Iron Man, but he did stuff like Zathura before that, and I think he did Elf before he did Iron Man. I mean, he had a string of successes before he was handed what turned out to be one of the biggest superhero franchises of all time. You're listening to Fat Guys of the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the box office really quick. Was I correct? Last week I said it's going to be $10 million for Guardians of the Galaxy, and yet it made $17 million again. It was only off like seven-tenths of a percent from the previous week. It made virtually the same amount of money it did the week before. And it has now become the highest grossing domestic film of the year, which it should crack $300 million sometime domestic or sometime this week. And it's already cracked $500 million worldwide. It's a massive hit. And I remember saying way back at the beginning, I said, well, it's going to do well, but it's not going to do Iron Man numbers. It's doing exactly Iron Man numbers, which not Iron Man 3 numbers, but Iron Man numbers, the first Iron Man and the second Iron Man numbers. This is a huge win for Marvel. And it's interesting because there's been some stories floating around of DC trying to, you know, make their own movies and not put humor into their films and to try and make it darker and grittier. And they're doing it completely opposite. They want to do what Marvel did, but they're doing something completely opposite that Marvel did. And Marvel's always made their films lighthearted and interesting and fun. I don't know if we're going to get that with the DC movies. I mean, there's a huge setup for failure. You know, Shazam and Wonder Woman, Aquaman. And they're pinning their hopes on Zack Snyder, which the other reason why Marvel worked is they didn't pin all their hopes on Jon Favreau. He only directed two of their movies. He started stuff. But he only directed two of their movies. They had multiple directors. They had a lot of other directors directing their stuff. You know, it's not like Jon Favreau directed three Iron Man movies in the Avengers. He directed two, and then he was involved in other ones. They had like Shane Black in there, and they had Kenneth Branagh directing Thor, and they had Joe Johnson directing Captain America, and they had Joss Whedon directing the Avengers. So they have a whole series. And then even as they go into Phase 2, they've got new people directing the movies, and they had James Gunn do Guardians of the Galaxy launching Phase 2. So they've got a stable of groups, but they're putting so much, DC's putting so much on the shoulders of Zack Snyder and David Goyer, that if it doesn't work out, you know, if this movie just does $250 million, if Batman versus Superman only does like $250 million done and done domestically, and maybe makes $500 or so worldwide, there's going to be a little bit of a come to Jesus meeting at Warner Brothers, because they're expecting Dark Knight numbers, and I don't know if you're going to get that. Well, so what's going to win this weekend? I'm going to go back to my old standby, $10 million for Guardians of the Galaxy. Because I don't think The Identical or The Innocent, I wouldn't be surprised if Innocence doesn't even make the top 10, and The Identical will come in at like 8, if anything. I think these are going to be massive, massive, massive flops. I mean, Thunder in the House of Magic, which is a small release that is not going in very many theaters, has a chance of making more money than these other two films. I think Guardians of the Galaxy is going to win. You're going to see a repeat of the same sort of spread from this past week. All right, and that sound means we need to move on into the world-famous DVD roundup. We talked about Mom's Night Out earlier. This is a faith-based hangover movie with girls, basically, is the best way to describe it. It doesn't have Rohypnol or excessive drinking or anything like that. It's a movie about a bunch of women having a mom's night out and the dad staying home with the kids, and then shenanigans ensue. And it's a cute enough movie. It's not bad. It's not heavy-handed. I mean, yeah, it has a message, but it's a cute film. I actually kind of liked it. This is the kind of movie you can take your mom to. You can rent it and go watch it with your mom and not worry about Jennifer Lawrence showing up nude in it. There's also Draft Day, which is kind of interesting, would be kind of interesting to watch, seeing as the Browns are up to their old tricks again. So the Browns are perpetually having problems in football. I don't even follow football, and I know that the Browns are having problems. But Draft Day is out, and that's a really good movie with Kevin Costner. It loses a little bit of his fantasy appeal because it's, of course, post-draft, and it was kind of helping with the anticipation for it, but it's a good movie. Check it out. It's a well-made movie. It's worth seeing. There's also They Came Together, which stars Paul Rudd and Amy Poehler. This is a hilarious movie. If you hate romantic comedies, or if you love romantic comedies, you'll like this movie because it's a spoof on them. If you love romantic comedies and you watch them a lot, you can get all the jokes because you've seen these cliches and they play off these cliches and they're doing it very tongue-in-cheek and very friendly. And you can tell that there's a certain David Wayne directed it, and there's a certain at least respect David Wayne has for the romantic comedy, even if he thinks that they're not something he would want to do. But it's a fun movie. It's a sort of like a Shop Around the Corner or You've Got Mail kind of setup where his company's going to put her company out of business and then they fall in love and New York's a character in the whole movie. It's funny. It's worth seeing. Seriously, go check it out. There's also Bonanza Season 7. It comes in a 2K set where they have Volume 1 and Volume 2. There's something like 9 discs to this season. This was back in the 60s when TV seasons had a lot more episodes than just like 20 or 24. There was like 30 some episodes. And I actually never watched Bonanza before this. And I've started watching it. And yeah, it's a 7th season. I mean, it was about halfway through its run because it was on for a decade and a half. But this is a good show. It really is a good show. I see why it's good. It's way better than like The Big Valley, which I've watched some of the episodes of that. That's really just a soap opera on the range. This one is, it's a good show. If you have not watched Bonanza, you can do yourself a service and watch Bonanza. Bonanza Season 7 is a neat show. Michael Landon's good in it. Haas is fun. It's good old-fashioned Western. Yeah, it's squeaky clean. And yeah, you got very racist Indian and Chinese and Latino characters in it. But it was the 60s. You kind of have to forgive that sort of thing. And then finally, the big daddy of the entire thing is Universal Monsters 30-film collection. Back on DVD, last year they did a Blu-ray release, which was kind of slim for how much they were charging. This one is, I think, listing at $200-ish. You can get it on Amazon for $100. It's pretty much all the Universal Monster movies. It's 30 films on 20-some discs, and it's Frankenstein, Dracula, The Wolfman, and all the sequels. You got Creature from the Black Lagoon, Invisible Man, Phantom of the Opera, The Mummy, and like all of their things. It's sort of like the Legacy Collection. They used to have the Legacies Collection, but you had to buy them separately for Frankenstein, Dracula, Wolfman, all those. It's a box set. It's $100 on Amazon for the best deal, but still, 30 films. I mean, it's like $3 a movie, which is not bad at all. I mean, you cost more renting that when Blockbuster was around. The stinker of the week is Cabin Fever, Patient Zero. Not a very good movie. It is not terrible, but it's just kind of the worst of the bunch. Finally, we need to go. Sorry, people. Go check your email for links to the Jennifer Lawrence nude photo shoot. In the meantime, we'll be talking next week about Dolphin Tale 2, No Good Deed, and The Drop. Yep, it's still September. Till then, have a fat time at the movies.